Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate, sitting here with Dr. James Knoll, who's the Director of Forensic Psychiatry at SUNY Upstate. We've been having a fascinating discussion about forensics and evidence and murder suicides and criminal behavior. And as we were taking the break and you were listening to the news, we asked, why is it that human beings are so interested in the dark side? Dr. Knoll, what do you think?
Well, I think that your comment reminded me also of a favorite book of mine written by a colleague of mine, Dr. Bob Simon, who is a past president of a forensic association that I belong to. The title of his book, I think, says it all. The title, and I can't believe I'm plugging his book, but the title of the book is Bad Men Do What Good Men Dream.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
and,
wow.
And I think what it speaks to is that, as human beings, we have many faults. We have pathologies. We have disease. And we have a dark side, too. And to ignore it or run from it, I think, is a mistake. I think it's more philosophically and ethically correct to try to understand it and investigate it.
Okay. Now, speaking of books, and just before we took the break, we mentioned stalking. And you have now participated in a book about stalking. Let's talk about that, because actually I think this could be very useful to a lot of our listeners. The name of your book?
Stalking, Psychiatric Perspective.
Psychiatric. And my first question was whether this was a book written for the professionals or whether it's written for the layperson like myself. What do you think? Would I be able to read it and understand it?
I definitely think that you would. We took some great pains to make it accessible to a wide range of audience.
Well, what's interesting to me about stalking is that I believe it's something that's going on all the time, and it hits a lot more people than we realize. My daughter was stalked, and we had a personal experience with it, and she's now had to move out of state, partially because of the stalking experience and for other reasons as well. But I think it's so much bigger than most of us are willing to recognize, and I also think, my personal opinion, that the advent of the internet has made stalking an awful lot easier, and in many ways, more deadly. There's a story in the news right now about a young girl who may have been stalked and committed suicide. This is all the stuff that you do, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And, I've been impressed over the time that I've been working with stalking issues, just how seriously can devastate the victim's life. And so just in my brief time since I came here to Syracuse, I've been contacted to consult in already a number of stalking cases.
You have.
And it's really had a negative impact on these folks' life. One being a TV news anchor in New York who was quite terrified and needed some assistance. And we were able to have a successful resolution with that case.
Very good. Well, let's talk about stalking itself. Where does stalking come from? Why does somebody stalk, or why is someone stalked?
Yeah, it's what we're learning more and more, that there are different types of stalkers with different motivations. But I think the best kind of generalistic broad brushstroke explanation I can give to you is that at its essence, it's a disorder of attachment or social bonding. And we're social beings. We grow up and we understand the world through our early attachments. And if those become disordered, it's likely to perpetuate itself into adulthood. And so oftentimes with stalkers that I've evaluated, I see someone with a very serious disorder in forming a healthy social attachments.
Okay. So is that like a mental illness? Would you call it a mental illness?
Well, sometimes they have a mental illness that coexists with that pathology, and then it can overlap and sometimes get very complex. But I guess in terms of the attachment disorder, I'm more talking about kind of a psychological construct and not a specific mental illness.
Okay. So the person begins stalking somebody they have an attachment to. How does it get so out of hand? Where don't they realize there's a line that is being crossed?
Often they do, although one of the best analogies, and the only reason I raise it is that this theme comes up again and again, and it's sort of trite, but the analogy of a drug addict. I can't tell you how many stalkers' communications I've analyzed where they make references to addiction, and they say, you were my drug.
So they're addicted to the person.
Exactly.
Ah.
And, I don't like to draw such, cliched analogies, but it comes up over and over and over again. And so I think one way to maybe understand it is this person to them means absolutely everything for whatever, impaired reason.
Mm-hmm.
And to ask them to set that aside and go on is asking them to give up a tremendous amount.
I see. And they probably really don't have anything to replace it with?
Right. Oftentimes, it takes stalking is a 24/7 occupation. And so oftentimes they don't aren't working full time, and they devote their full time to this pursuit.
To the whole obsession of it.
Correct.
Very interesting. You also work locally in the prisons, working with prisoners and what their mental state of mind. Speak to us a little about that.
Yes. When I wear really two hats. One hat is my forensic investigator evaluator hat, where I try to help and assist the courts and private businesses. My second hat is my clinician hat, and I try never to put them both on at the same time.
That's probably a good idea.
Yes. And so when I'm wearing my clinician hat, I'm most often involved in issues of involving correctional mental health, where I try to evaluate and treat mentally ill offenders or persons with serious mental illness who've been caught up in the net of criminalization.
I see. And are these people typically who at some point will be out of prison and you're trying to help them out then?
Some are. Some are not. Some I've treated both. I've treated a number of people who have life without parole, and they're grappling with those issues of purpose and meaning and depression and so forth. So it's a full gamut.
Very interesting. And now you also work with students. These are people who in the future will be doing kind of what you're doing too.
Right. One of my main missions and probably my greatest passion is the Forensic Psychiatry Fellowship here at SUNY Upstate. And so my main role is to train and educate future forensic psychiatrists.
Very interesting. And then they will become involved in their communities as well?
Hopefully so, yes.
Very good. Well, you use your expertise in so many different ways. You're testifying in court and writing books and teaching students. Where's the majority of your interest?
I have a touch of ADD because I get bored easy, and I'm always fascinated with new things that come up. So I'm into very many different things. More recently, I would say I've been heavily looking into forensic psycholinguistics, or the study of language and the psychiatric and psychological aspects of language for forensic purposes.
Very interesting. And that's what you were describing to us a little bit earlier in part of your forensic practice. Well, Dr. James Knoll, this has been a fascinating discussion. We are so glad you came by this morning, shared your time with us. I'm sure that our listeners will have many questions, and I hope they will contact us, and we'll get back in touch with you. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me.
And listeners, it is time to take a break, but we will be back shortly. This is University Hospital's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.